keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling in flare. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Really glad to be back with you. Hopefully, you caught the show on Monday. If not, you can go back on YouTube and catch it. And, you know, it is kind of important to keep up on all of our past shows, and we got a show archive there on YouTube. Just search UCY-TV, go to the channel, you'll find all of our old shows, because sometimes we're talking about topics, you know, that continue on from the last show and the last week and the last month. Monday we were talking about Iowa. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit more about Iowa as well. I want to get Jake's input because I know Jake wasn't around for the last show. I want to know what he has to talk about. You know, so we're going to be talking about Iowa. We got a bunch of news to go over tonight, a bunch of election stuff, the TPP. We got a great guest that's going to be joining us a little bit later. I mean, got a great show in store for you tonight. So let's start breaking into this stuff because we got a great action-packed show tonight. We're going to have to get through this stuff relatively quickly. So first, let me introduce my panel. I got DB Schwartz, my longtime co-host. What's up, man?
Hey, Nick, what's going on, man? Just, still, I guess, shell-shocked a bit about what happened, man. But as we can see, this totally exposes the sham of what the selection cycle is looking to try to become.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, you know, for the good people that were probably out there and legitimately supporting people like Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul, which are the two candidates that are running that are actually like relatively, you know, legitimate candidates that actually seem to give a shit, you know, to me, in my opinion. I feel bad.
They're the most normal guys, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. They're like the actual real guys that are, they join politics with the noble concept of actually doing, in their opinion, the right thing, I think, at least. But, you know, it's hard to say, you know, truly if that's the goal. But, you know, the thing is that as we witnessed, Rand Paul dropped out of the race today. From many different accounts, it looked like Bernie Sanders got kind of shafted over there in Iowa, which is something that we talked about here on the show repeatedly. And that's, again, why I encourage all the listeners tonight to go back and listen to our previous shows, because this is stuff that we kind of predicted was going to happen, and you know, sure enough, it comes true later on, and we start seeing it, you know, unveil itself, and it's stuff that it's not surprising because the same exact stuff happened to Ron Paul back in 2012, and so it's kind of, you know, just stuff that recurs, and you have these grassroots candidates that get the shaft in Iowa, and the media runs off with the election results and is like, oh, Hillary Clinton's the winner, you know what I mean, and so. Yeah, man. I mean, it is really difficult to sit there and watch it happen. And for all these people that were out there breaking their backs to promote their candidates, Bernie Sanders, Rand Paul, and I mean, you know, who knows? There may be even some Trump supporters out there tonight. Hopefully not. But hey, maybe they'll learn something. Yeah. But I'll tell you what, man. Like, you know, I feel really bad for those people that are out there, you know, doing everything they could to promote Bernie Sanders and Rand Paul, only to see the horrible shafting that took place out there.
You know, the craziest thing too is I read somewhere like Jeb Bush's campaign spent 6 times as much as all of the other campaigns, including Hillary's combined, and he got like 2% of the vote.
I know, it's hilarious. He spent like several thousand dollars per vote that he received. It was pretty bad. Pretty bad for Jebby.
And now all of his super PAC money goes to Rubio.
Yeah, that's exactly, and that's what's going to happen. And again, this is something that we've been talking about here on the show. I mean, I hate to harp on this to beat this dead horse, but how many times have we talked about how Rubio is the preeminent Republican nominee? We've talked about this over and over and over. And now after Iowa, looking at the media coverage and how, you know, Rubio got third place, but somehow like he's the winner of Iowa. It's like, wow. And it's like Ted Cruz is
well,
like an afterthought.
It's like, who's more powerful, the military-industrial complex for Rubio or Goldman Sachs for Ted Cruz?
Exactly. And, you know, the funny thing is that, you know, we can make the joke here that Goldman Sachs actually won Iowa, right? Because, you know, Ted Cruz has his ties to Goldman Sachs through his wife. He took $1 million from Goldman Sachs to run his senatorial campaign. And then Hillary Clinton, Goldman Sachs is one of her longtime financial backers, you know, and so we have this Goldman Sachs election over in Iowa, and unfortunately that's how it played out. Now moving into New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders has had a longtime lead over Hillary Clinton, but his loss in Iowa, or at least, you know, how the media has been reporting the results over there, because, you know, I've seen plenty of different, you know, discrepancies there in Iowa.
But was it really a loss? Because it was so close that now it's actually galvanized the youth. And I, you can see it now in the colleges up in New England. There, it's the whole thing starting with marching and all that now. I mean, he's awoken something. Maybe even if he doesn't get the nomination, he's awoken something.
Exactly. And I like to think of that as kind of like the Ron Paul effect, right? Jake's on the line. First, I want to go to Jake because I know you were kind of out of commish during election night. But what do you make of what went down over in Iowa?
Yeah, I was recovering from driving through a blizzard. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to start calling you Nick Tradamus because you called it. Man, you predicted all along that they were setting Rubio up. And what I think is going to happen is I think they're setting up the two. I mean, we're definitely seeing the establishments asserting their control. And, like, we see it in the media, too. But I think on the Republican side, they're setting up for, you know, they're setting both Cruz and Rubio up as the establishment people to take on what we thought was an unstoppable Trump. Now, as soon as either Cruz or Rubio loses one of these later primaries, they can dump all their support onto the other one, and that will beat Trump. It'll probably, I think you're right, I think it will probably be Rubio, because I think Cruz eventually is going to start looking so crazy that he'll lose. You know, I don't think he'll win New Hampshire. I don't think he'll win South Carolina. On the Democratic side, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I don't really think it qualifies as a loss. Sanders could have easily come out on that night and claimed victory, but he didn't, because he realized that the importance was just how close it was. And I was watching MSNBC the next day, and Chris Matthews on Hardball was interviewing Hillary, and it was almost, I mean, I would call it pathetic, except it's just, you come to expect it, but I mean, it was just literally, he was just feeding her talking points and literally like describing the Bernie Sanders revolution as not realistic, and not how young people need to realize that what Bernie Sanders wants to do is just not realistic, and that's not how government works. So the media is, you know, very complicit in this. And yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe that Chris Matthews interview. But exactly. Yeah, the establishment during
election time, the myth of objectivity in the mainstream media kind of flies right out the window, right? And as right. you're saying, and they were literally going in and serving up talking points to Hillary Clinton on MSNBC, which is, you know, everyone knows MSNBC is like completely part of like the Democratic establishment and part of the Democratic machine, right? And like all they do is defend Obama, defend Hillary Clinton, and talk about how crazy the Republicans are. Now, I agree with them on that aspect. The Republicans are crazy. But I disagree with the fact that they're over here defending Hillary Clinton and shrugging off all of these things that she's been now coming under scrutiny for with the email scandal and all of her foreign policy blunders. I mean, this is the same news outlet that would have been critical of George Bush had he done what Hillary and Obama did in Libya. But because it's Hillary and Obama, they just turn a blind eye to it and try to make excuses. And now during election time, all objectivity goes out the window. They're not objective to begin with, but at least they try to pretend they are. But during these times, it's just completely blatant. And man, great point. I don't watch MSNBC, but I can just imagine the kind of talking points that they're going into right now. DB, what were you going to say?
Just, you know, how surreal it was, to be honest, dude. It was just like Twilight Zone. And as far as I don't think I can remember ever a government really surviving ignoring the youth if there was a youth movement, and especially with one as huge as Generation Millennial. I don't think they understand, like, if they get these people to a point where they feel like, you know, a political revolt is more palatable than sitting in their parents' basement not being able to get a job with their degree they owe 50 or 60K on. And they can't get out from underneath that. I mean, that's the picture, man. So at some point, there's a breaking point where Madden freaking 15 and 16 in mom and dad's basement doesn't cut it anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was, you know, it was really sad, dude. I saw one video on YouTube that was uploaded, made its way to Drudge Report. But it was talking about the people that were kind of trying to dispute one of the caucus processes over in Iowa, and it was clearly being run by a Hillary Clinton sympathizer, and they were pulling some funny business at the caucus, and they were changing up the rules, and this young guy, and I felt so bad for him. He was trying to get the person on record saying, you know, what it is that how they were going to change the rules and say it on video, and the guy was like refusing to say it on video, you know, trying to avoid transparency and accountability and stuff. And it was just kind of sad seeing a young person out there actually passionate about something. And, you know, in this case, it was his support for Bernie Sanders, trying to, you know, play the game, you know, play this whole democracy game, and then just being shut down and just being just hitting dead ends, you know, and then they tried to kick him out of the caucus. And it really did. It was really kind of saddening to see that happen.
Well, the younger generation is tired of getting taxed at the effective rate European nations do and not getting any of the benefits. When you look at income tax, when you look at sales tax and everything else, mandatory health care we have to pay for, we're paying the same as in Europe, but then we're paying for college and health care, and we get none of those sweet benefits. So that's why people are pissed off, man. It's like, why do we not have European living standards when we have a massive, massive economy?
Exactly, and that's the thing, is that we pay socialist tax rates and we don't get any of the benefits of a socialist country, you know. Unfortunately for us, instead of our money going towards universal health care and, you know, universal college education and you know, that kind of thing, safety nets, our socialist tax rates are going towards supporting the American empire and bombing Libya and shit like that.
Our money funds drone bombing.
Instead
of health care, we get killing other people.
Exactly. And it keeps Walmart afloat, and it keeps McDonald's afloat, and it keeps us growing monocrops. I mean, it screws everything up.
Instead of healthcare, we're bombing Doctors Without Borders over in Afghanistan. I mean, it's sick. That being said, we also have Claire Bernish on the call tonight, and Claire wrote an amazing article that I wish it would have got more attention about some of the funding that's coming into this election. And while we're on this election topic, I want to talk about this. The title of the article is called Koch funding this election cycle could feed 4.5 million hungry kids for a month. And just, you know, that is just a little perspective. But this article is very much a bipartisan takedown of the powers that be that are kind of behind the scenes funding both sides of this election on the establishment end of things. But Claire, this article, it was really, really good. It really goes into the Koch brothers and the Soros funding and all that stuff. What can you tell us about this obscene money that's flooding into these campaigns?
Well, I think, honestly, that the most striking funding of all is the Koch brothers, who set out to spend like as much as possible on this election, which is a very near $900 million, which, considering, and I found this fact, the Republican National Committee in 2012 for the presidential election and two congressional elections committees actually spent a total of $657 million, like the entire Republican National Committee. So the difference is staggering. You can only imagine like where that funding's going, which I'm sure it can't all be traced. But to imagine that money is not influencing the vote, or that, like, you know, the average person's vote matters at all when you look at these numbers, you'd have to be insane to think that.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally like a handful of billionaires bankrolling this entire process.
Yeah, for real.
And
like Soros spent $6 million on Hillary's super PAC. There were a couple. There's what I think. Oh, The Intercept described them as a pro-Israel billionaire power couple. Spent $3 million on Hillary's super PAC. They're just. I mean, the numbers are just amazing to imagine that this much money is being spent on an election cycle, when there are so many better ways to be spending this money. There are so many other things that this money could be going for, but unfortunately, of course, it's not.
That's Citizens United for you. The Supreme Court
exactly
codified this for us into law.
Yes. Making, you know, corporations have, they're saying like corporate free speech is their spending on basically election advertising, which is so absurd. I mean, it's been an outrage ever since that decision was handed down, and it continues to be. I mean, for this reason exactly. I mean, it's so, the amount of money just dumped into these candidates is just ridiculous.
I've seen estimates that this election may cost about $4 billion on spending, and that's just obscene. $2 billion for each party. And in the end, you know, they hand us down with these candidates like Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio. It doesn't even matter which one wins or not. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty much, you know, regardless of who wins and all that money spent and wasted, I guess, it's going to be two empire-loving candidates that are going to be in charge, or one of the two, and it's kind of sad.
Each represents like the two leading factions in American politics, the military-industrial complex and the banking cartel, you know? So it's kind of weird to have two heads of the Hydra fighting each other, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, the thing is, too, is that according to some calculations, lobbying of the government and like funding these campaigns and stuff like that, it's one of the most handsomely rewarding investments you can make. In fact, between 2007 and 2012, 200 of the most politically active corporations spent $5.8 billion on lobbying and funding campaigns. But, and I wrote this article back in March of last year, the return on investment was something like $4.4 trillion. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the return on investment is like 76,000% that these corporations and these heavy hitters make by lobbying and financing campaigns. So, I mean, it's not it may seem pointless to us, but these guys make a lot of money from their lobbying. And it's just so, man, I mean, it's just sickening. It's sickening.
Well, I mean, just comparing, I mean, just for the hell of it, I was comparing numbers for like poverty and such, and, using the, USDA's kind of meager food program, which would barely let hungry people survive, but it would be enough to give them more food than they have right now. It's called the Thrifty Plan. If you do that, the amount of money that the Kochs alone spent would feed 4,500,000 children in a month, or 375,000 children for an entire year. just with that money. And that's sorely needed.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Was that dumped into Jeb's super PAC?
Actually, I'm not really sure. I wasn't able to track down exactly where it went.
I think it was a combined, because they also finance, congressional and senatorial and initiative ballots and stuff like that.
Right.
I think most of the Koch money is probably going to end up going towards Rubio if and when he becomes a nominee. If not, they'll probably bankroll Cruz if he does remain the front runner. I don't see that happening because Cruz is Jake, I think, was saying, Cruz is just eventually he's going to sound so crazy. And the media can easily take Cruz down. I mean, Trump was hard to take down, but Cruz is going to be a lot easier to take down with tax and all that.
Even Trump's going to soon admit, I think this was a straw campaign. Maybe they were filming the whole thing, dude. Seriously.
I wouldn't be surprised if there was a documentary that came out about Trump later on or some kind of reality TV thing.
What do you think's going on in the Bush headquarters right now? Do you think I mean, that's got to be just like the darkest place on earth right now. I just imagine Jeb Bush in front of a fireplace with a glass of whiskey and like a skull next to him that he's like tapping his fingers on slowly, and he gets his dad and his granddad, or he gets his dad and his brother on the line in a conference call and just say, what the hell happened?
And then Barbara gives him a swift kick to the nuts.
I mean, Bush, this was supposed to be, this is the one of the preeminent political families.
Yeah.
And where is he? This is the fall of a dynasty.
I just think that Bush was, they're so embedded in this process that it's not a coincidence that he lost. He wasn't supposed to win. I think he was up there to show that, hey, look, Bush is running, but look, we're a lot smarter than electing Bush again. We're going to go with someone way better. Marco Rubio, which is George W. Bush light, you know what I'm saying? And so, I mean, I don't think he was ever going to have a chance to win. I mean, the Bush name has become toxic. They did what they did with Iraq and all that stuff, and that now they're just not electable anymore. And Bush was put up there as just to say, look, you have options. Bush is one of them, but look how smart we are. We're not electing Bush this time around. We're going to elect someone a lot better.
Maybe so, the country has a two Bush limit.
Yeah.
Someone find out who his daughter's married because they're about to name change.
Yeah, he may go with the Latino last name coming up here pretty soon because I know they're one of the Bush sons is in fact no Bush Jeb Bush is married to a Hispanic woman and his son is Hispanic, and so that may be the next heir to the Bush dynasty coming up. You never know. I mean, just crazy.
Are any of them at the Bilderberg this year? Like, this election's probably already been made. Rubio looked like he was president in his speech. He finished third, and he looked like he'd won the presidency.
I know, exactly, and the media really anointed him, too. Ted Cruz is not getting, any media attention, even though he won, and it was an upset, too. He upsetted Trump, and he's not getting any media attention. I mean, that kind of tells you where his chances lie. I think Rubio is definitely the preemptive nominee. We're going to have to wait and see how that plays out, but, the prediction is here. You heard it here first.
You called it, seriously a year ago.
Yeah, when he announced when he announced that he was running is when I was like, yep, he's the one they're going to choose. He's the perfect candidate. Now, moving on to this next story here, which is still related, Jimmy Carter today came out swinging on the BBC, which is the British Broadcasting, I think it's corporation or company, one of the two. Jimmy Carter, man, he's a former president. Many people call him the worst president ever. I'd highly disagree with that because he's one of the only presidents that didn't start any wars, which is probably one of the reasons why he's branded as that, as one of the worst. He came out today, and this is a direct quote. It gives legal bribery a chance to prevail because almost all the candidates, whether they are honest or not, and whether they are Democratic or Republican, depend on these massive infusions of money from the very rich people in order to have money to campaign. And so he basically was saying that the American electoral system has fallen under the complete influence of what he calls legal bribery, which is more or less Citizens United, which is what he actually referenced there when he was talking about it. So he's coming out slamming Citizens United. He's talking about how money has taken over the electoral system and how he would have never been able to win in the current political climate because his opponent would have outraised him with the corporations and the big money or whatever you want to, you know, however you want to describe it. So this is pretty big, and it's not a big surprise because Jimmy Carter has been coming out railing against lobbying, railing against big money in politics and Citizens United ever since last year, and it kind of came as a surprise at first. But this is, I think, the third time that he's made some pretty big statements on this system, and so that's kind of a good development. I think there's a lot of people out there that respect Jimmy Carter, and of course he wasn't a perfect president, but he was one of those like kind of regular guy, you know, average Joe type of presidents, kind of like how we would describe maybe a Rand Paul and maybe a Bernie Sanders type of guy.
And he was a peacenik. He kept us out of actual like huge conflict a few times.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, for him to come out and rail against this stuff, it's kind of a, in my opinion, a pretty decent development.
He's not a reptilian.
Yeah, he's not. He's not.
he's from Inner Earth.
So, you know, we got to move on here. We're going to have a guest joining us in a few minutes. A couple other stories that I wanted to get to tonight. First off, we got this story about HSBC, which is this bank. What's it called? The Hong Kong – I can't remember what it's called. Let me see if I can pull this up. Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation. They were caught back in 2012 laundering money for drug cartels, organizations thought to be tied to terrorism, and a lot of stuff. They laundered approximately $850 million for drug cartels. They were laundering money for the Saudis. They were helping them finance terrorism. You name it. They were going against all the sanctions that were set up and all that stuff. Now, the feds, the Department of Justice, opened an investigation. They, at the time, refused to prosecute HSBC. And I quote, "The Justice Department had looked at the collateral consequences of prosecuting the HSBC or taking away its U.S. banking license. Such a move would have cost thousands of jobs," he said. So apparently, if you have a big company, you can get away with laundering money for cartels and stuff like that just because it'd be too destructive to the economy to prosecute you or revoke your banking license. So they pretty much got a get out of jail free card there, and they're able to do what in the hell they want and launder money and do whatever they want. But the interesting story here, and this is on the Anti-Media, we posted it yesterday by Kerry Wedler, is that the Department of Justice, they opened a investigation into this bank, and now they're refusing to share the details of this investigation with the public. So, like, they're actually like kind of in concert with the bank in hiding all the details that they're uncovering about the practices of HSBC and their money laundering. And so this here is a big deal. It kind of shows how much the Obama administration is in bed with the banking cartels and that kind of thing, and shit, maybe even the drug cartels if you look at it that way, because these guys are hiding information about the favors they were doing for the drug cartels and Saudi Arabia and their ties to financing terrorist institutions. One thing here that maybe one of the reasons why they're keeping this stuff under wraps is maybe HSBC was helping to create funding for ISIS. I mean, that's something that we can't really we can't put that out of the picture. That may be a possibility, and that may be one of the reasons why they're trying to keep this stuff secret.
Nick, there was some kind of a pipeline going on where the Saudis were basically getting all these Colombian ex-FARC fighters, you know, the guerrillas, to go fight with ISIS because I guess they could feasibly pass as being Middle Eastern if they were all wrapped up or whatever. So they're supplying them all these expert guerrilla warfare fighters, and in return, just buying up all of the cocaine. So it's all going through the Middle East over into Europe. So they're serving as like the launderers for the coke while the other people give them fighters.
Yeah, I mean, not very surprising considering the Iran-Contra scandal. And, you know, we've been doing that for a while now, right? Now, here's the cool thing. The interesting thing here is that in spite of the efforts that were taken by the DOJ and HSBC, a judge has ruled that a lot of these details are going to have to be disclosed. So we're going to get it. We're going to get to see at least some of this stuff. I'm sure a lot of it may be redacted. I'm not sure how it's going to come out. The details aren't out yet, but the judge has ruled that the details do have to come out. So we're going to have to wait and see how that turns out. And so that's going to be a very interesting prospect, you know, to say the least. You know, and so we're going to have to wait and find out, you know. And this is the banking system. It got bailed out back in, you know, 2009. They've been pretty adamant about keeping all the details under wraps. There was a partial audit, I know, back, I can't remember when it was, 2010, 2011, and I think it was co-sponsored by both Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul, and they pulled a partial audit and they found the Fed had bailed out like $16 trillion worth of assets for the big banks and stuff, and that was
like $23 trillion total, wasn't it? Like when it was all said, because of all the, yeah,
something like that, man. It was just some obscene number. I mean, the U.S. economy is only like
16, right?
Yeah, or something. Like $16 trillion a year. So I mean, they bailed out like an entire economy worth of assets there, and you know that itself is just obscene. but you know, the as we were talking about earlier in the show, I mean, the banking interests have a heavy hand in politics. Goldman Sachs, with their Ted Cruz connection, and also with Hillary Clinton. And all the other banking establishments, and keep in mind that they're also in control of the Federal Reserve. And we all know about the Fed and what it does and all that stuff. And so it's really hard, even if there are politicians out there that do want to hold these guys accountable, it's going to be really tough because these guys are in control of so much power and political capital and money and influence in the economy that they really have the government under the finger, and they kind of tell them what to do. And so
the only way to hold them accountable too would be like back it with silver, which is what JFK was trying to make happen. So I don't know.
What do you think would happen if Sanders became president? How could that possibly?
He'd be the king of vetoes. I was just talking about that. He would be the king of vetoes for at least his first term, until at least there was a turnover from the old guard to the new generation that I hope would be inspired to run. You know, like, I hope Nick will run for Chula Vista mayor or something. Shit's got to change, dude.
I don't know about that. You know, that question is it's a tough one, man. I mean, there's so many. I just don't think that a guy like Bernie Sanders would ever be able to win. I don't think they would let a guy like that win. The money is against him. The media is going to bury him. I mean, you know, there's so many factors at play there.
Unless Putin bankrolls him or something.
Yeah, yeah.
what if they get to him and reappropriate the message? And, you know, I mean,
well, the youth's already bought into it, though.
Yeah, exactly. So you get someone in there as a Trojan horse who says he's gonna, you know, I mean, it's kind of really kind of like the more just nefarious Obama, you know.
Obama was the Trojan horse.
Obama was the Trojan horse.
Mentioning Putin, I don't know if you guys saw the video, but Trump is really cozying up to Putin as of late. I don't know if you guys saw that. that was pretty entertaining. But I think now we're joined by our guest tonight, Eleanor Goldfield. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, what's up? So, Eleanor, you do so many things. I don't know how to describe you completely, but you're an activist, an artist, a musician, and a journalist. And you've got a bunch of stuff going on. You have an awesome video outlet called Act Out. You also are the founder of Art Killing Apathy, and you're a musician with the Rooftop Revolutionaries. Really happy to have you on the show tonight. It's been a while. I know you interviewed me a while back, and I know you got a bunch of stuff to talk about, and we're really excited to talk about it. But first, I wanted to ask you if you wanted to do any like poetry or spoken word or anything like that. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. I picked out a piece that I thought would be a good fit for your show, so I can go ahead and do that if you want.
Awesome, let's do it. And then after that, we want to talk to you about some other stuff. We're going to talk about the TPP and some other you know, some of the projects you're working on, and then some other news stories and stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
Great. So this is called Spilt Stupid, and it's from, I start each episode of Act Out with a spoken word piece, which is an outlet for my creative activism. And this is from episode 38. So here we go. We knocked it over and it spread, and all agreed that it was placed, tempting as it gleamed, and hit reflections of our most base and simple means. Not just the dumb, but evil, too, they flickered in that tall, smooth glass, sugared rim, a snicker, come hither grin. And then, a collective swing of a collective arm, pushing back intelligence to harm. First reports just stood and stared, perhaps the teacher lit a flare, in one last act of loud despair, but no one moved or cared. Mesmerized and hypnotized, collective eyes took in the still of stupid, like a love struck dumb by Cupid. This viscous blend of brightly colored lies did rain on empty minds that quickly stained, a frolicking foray, a common sense intelligence and questioning mind drained. Vapid entertainment took the stage. We could but watch as spills turned into rivers, etching out a sliver. In every nook and cranny, a crackpot blessed insanity, a dumb fuck damned humanity, and we stood by in dumbfounded silence, waiting. And stupid might be slow, but fast to spread. And as we sat there gaping, idiocy gaining, here a school, there a school, plucked from history, this poor fool. Ah, who needs a founding father so intent on separating church and state? Why, gods are government. Bleach will mop that up. Smells nice, too. Our children need not know the context of our blood-soaked wars and conquests. Meanwhile, nightly news is paid off crews run by fools convincing you that what we're seeing isn't our world overheating. It's fairy dust plus a liberal putz. I don't know who. Pick one. Still fear a change of climate. Fear a change in whiteness. Darkness creeps across the land. Grab your guns, hold out your hand, and shoot. Peace will not protect you. Facts are useless in a land that holds belief as truth. Furthermore, those boring books over which you pore are just not selling. Like this mindless diatribe on who to blame and where to hide, those guys on Channel 5 want you to know that they have pride in killing, drilling, and blood spilling. As long as it's an Arab and the fetuses are safe inside, a woman who you should learn to ride but never look on equal footing in the eyes. Meanwhile, questions lob from greased-up oiled cogs. When did it become the job of press to offer handies to the dicks who line up randy, ready for a fight about as dim as blackout lights on low? We set the bar at limbo highs and shrug when we see crawling minds sliding down that evolutionary chain, monkeys doing face palms, embarrassed by the ancient family ties, a revolutionary change. Generations paved the way for expansive thought, a wider world to learn, be taught, and then we take a break to say, I've had it with this smarter brain. I crave simple. Answers at face value. Don't show me facts. I trust you. One book that says it all. God is good. Await the fall. Women in their place. Black and poor give us space. It's their fault. Bomb them. Needs more guns. We got them. College cops. Drop them. All you need is what you see, and what you see is shown by the very same people who set that glass of full dumb ass at our country's core, push, then wobble, then it toppled, and here we sit and stare and squabble, soaked in stupid, sick. It sticks, and as we sit, we sink, the brink of common sense, intelligence, up there with the napkins, wondering who will use them.
Wow, that was amazing.
Thank you.
I think you're getting some applause there in the background. That was really awesome, and I've always liked your work, and the attitude that you bring to it is just blows my mind. It's so passionate. I really, really like it. And I'm glad you're joining us tonight. And, you know, you do so much more than art. I mean, activism and bringing the news in maybe maybe an unconventional, innovative way. And I think it really is effective. Today, there was a huge, huge story that pretty much, I mean, I didn't see it anywhere in the mainstream. I mean, I guess you'd have to search it out to try to actually find it, because I guess we're so inundated with the election news and all the other stuff going on that's happening. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is probably the single biggest and most important news story that we're facing as a generation, in fact, was signed today by Barack Obama over in New Zealand. Yeah. And I know you've been doing a lot of work regarding the TPP, and the I've done so much activism, and we've done so many stories regarding the TPP on the anti-media as well, but it doesn't. It really seems like these politicians just aren't listening about it, and they're really, really in bed with these corporations that are trying to push this TPP deal through. And, you know, it was signed today, and I think it still has to be kind of ratified by the Congress, which I'm not really optimistic at this point that they're going to stop it or anything like that. But Eleanor, what can you tell us about this TPP and you know, what's going on with it, and like, what can people do to try to get involved and try to at least try to stop it or raise awareness to it?
So basically, I mean, and anti-media has done a great job of giving people news that they won't find on corporatized, propagandized media. But the TPP is, I mean, it's a severe media blackout, as you mentioned. And it's basically a corporate coup. It's a global corporate takeover that crushes our sovereignty, not just as nations, but as people with control of our own communities. I mean, you could go into specifics, but, you know, as Julian Assange said, when WikiLeaks started releasing pieces of the TPP before the text was made public, which, by the way, was not supposed to happen until 4 years after it had been ratified, and it was only because of the activist push that they released it early. And literally, if you were to print it out, single page, like single-sided pages, it would be, I'm 5'8". It would reach about up to my waist. It's horrendous. And the only people that have really read the whole thing, unless there's some poor bastard intern in Congress that's been forced to read it, are these corporate lawyers. So basically, it has, like Julian Assange said, it has every facet of your life in its crosshairs: education, healthcare, workers' rights, the environment. Everything from the food you eat to the air you breathe, and then overarching all of this is these corporate courts, where basically corporations can sue a country for cutting out profits. We saw this with TransCanada based on NAFTA. They basically sued the U.S. for cutting the Keystone XL. So imagine that, but like 10 times worse, because they call TPP NAFTA on steroids. Basically, we could be sued and have to pay out corporations. And these corporate tribunals are not peopled by anybody but corporate lawyers. So it really is a corporate takeover, and which is, you know, why there's a media blackout. In terms of what people can do, flushthetpp.org is a tremendous toolkit. It has everything from actions, and today and tomorrow there are actions across the globe. They shut down streets in Auckland today. There was a protest outside the White House. Tomorrow's another big push. So flushthetpp.org is a tremendous place to find information and also to activate on the issue of TPP.
Yeah, the TPP, and you know, we've been talking about this on the show and on the website for a while now. And you know, I've described it recently as kind of corporations cutting the middleman out, right? And the middleman being governments and local governments and things like that. And you know, these corporate tribunals are really just getting rid of that other step that these corporations would have to take as far as lobbying governments and bribing politicians and bankrolling elections. And now that stuff with the TPP being signed today, and of course, like I said, it still has to go through Congress. Thanks to the fast track thing, it's going to be just a strictly up or down vote. There's no debate. There's no ending it. None of that stuff. But it really does. It cuts the politicians out of the picture, I think, eventually. And it really establishes a kind of corporate government, you know, umbrella over the top of all of the, you know, local sovereignty, national sovereignty, indigenous rights, It establishes corporate control over trademarking and patenting and things like that. It's expected to drive up costs of healthcare. It's expected mm-hmm. to possibly affect a lot of websites with intellectual property claims and that kind of stuff. As well as, you know, the thing that Obama and Republicans in Congress, and this is the kind of the part here where it gets a little foggy, because ironically, it's the Republicans in Congress and Obama that have been the most vocally supportive of this Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's been a lot of detractors in the Democratic Party in Congress that have kind of, for a point there, they put the whole trade deal in jeopardy, but eventually they came around and agreed to the fast track and all that stuff because they were looking for money to retrain people that were going to lose their jobs. And that's what's so ironic to me here is that this deal is being sold to the American public as like, oh, this thing is going to like help our economy. It's going to create like a bunch of jobs for all you working class folks out there and stuff like that. But, you know, the funny thing is that the Democrats didn't want to budge unless they added some budget there to help retrain people that were going to lose their jobs. We covered a story on January 22nd on the Anti-Media of some pretty recent research that talked about how the United States is going to lose almost a 500,000 good, like well-paying jobs because of the TPP. And so that's one factor that I think, in my opinion, is really important. The TPP is going to harm the working class American. They're going to lose jobs in very much the same vein that NAFTA kind of was sold as a job creating bill that actually cost U.S. manufacturing jobs, especially in the automotive sector and things like that. Now, the other aspect here of the TPP that I'm really concerned about too is the exploitation of third world labor and mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of countries like Malaysia, and Claire is actually on the call tonight, one of our awesome journalists at the Anti-Media, covered the implications of the TPP with Malaysia and the kind of like the slave labor atmosphere that they have over there. And now keep in mind we're kind of securing a trade deal with a country that still practices slave labor. I want to bring Claire into this conversation to tell us a little bit about, you know, how third world labor is going to be exploited by this TPP deal. Claire, what do you think?
Well, with Malaysia in particular, they were downgraded to a tier 3 human rights abuser, basically, which is the lowest level, after 2 years of being warned that that was going to happen because they hadn't improved significantly the exploitation of workers. They hadn't done anything to regulate basically slavery that was going on and sex trafficking and human trafficking that was going on in the country. And so they got downgraded to Tier 3, and then when the TPP came about and it was realized that Malaysia, who is geostrategically important to the U.S., would be excluded from the deal, they just arbitrarily moved them back up to Tier 2. Like, with no reason whatsoever, no improvements made at all to anything that was going on, they just bumped the country back up. And that just excuses all of those things that are going on, which are just horrible.
Yeah, and, you know, to me it kind of just goes to show how important this deal is for the powers that be. You know, they really want to, in my opinion, create like a new trading bloc that can counterbalance against the Chinese economic model that's been brewing up. And, you know, the Chinese economy has grown hugely in the past decade. Now they're going through some tough times right now because of bad monetary policy and other factors that are, you know, that we still don't even know about fully. But, you know, to me, this TPP deal is very much a part of the corporate empire. Right, and they're trying to create a trade bloc that can counterbalance Chinese expansion economically, and they're willing to overlook, you know, pretty much anything to get this thing done. And Malaysia is a perfect example. It's really bad.
I think there are a couple things that are misnomers about the TPP too. I think first of all, calling it trade is a little bit ridiculous because it really is a corporate coup, and calling it anything. Putting free anywhere in that title is absurd. I mean, there's nothing free about this. There's nothing transparent about this. There's nothing that's fair to any of the workers around the world about this. And it's going to encompass 40% of the GDP in the world. So, it's just absurd to call it anything other than just kind of like this binding policy with corporate overlords.
And it's a job killer. It really is. I want to go back to Eleanor here with this TPP thing. I mean, what is it to you that really stands out the most with this deal that is like the most apprehensible thing? Because there's so many different grievances here, and the activist community has been opposing this thing for years. I mean, I've been going to protests for like 3 years, and I remember when Obama came to San Diego, where I'm located, we went out there and we saw his limo pull up, and we're out there protesting and stuff. And you know, it's been a years long battle. But what is it to you that really is the most pressing issue with this TPP?
I mean, as an activist, I bounce around between I'm sort of a nomad in the activist community. One of my overarching issues is money and politics, but that's sort of the evil from which all other evils stem. And I mean, you mentioned like food safety, like GMOs, Monsanto, the ability of corporations to sue countries that want to put in place, you know, safety mechanisms for farmers, that want to put labeling laws, that would completely sidestep all of that. So that wouldn't be allowed. You know, you and Claire had covered the worker issue pretty well. And then, of course, there's the environmental impact also tied to the ability to sue governments. You know, if TransCanada can just sue the government and say, like, well, this is our profit we're talking about, then it's like, oh, well, I guess we'll just build this pipeline then. So that's on the table as well. You mentioned internet freedom, and that's a big deal too. What the TPP will do is require ISPs to take down sites without a court order. It's much harder on whistleblowers like Snowden and Chelsea Manning. It exports the worst parts of the U.S. copyright law without mandating fair use. It makes it illegal to unlock, modify, or mess with your own device. It basically makes encryption illegal. And again, gives companies the right to sue the U.S. over any of those infringements. You could go to jail for just sharing an image that's not your own on Facebook, for example. Restricted access to medicine. I mean, Wall Street running amok, like, you know, Dodd-Frank, that would go out the window. I mean, like, it's sort of like pick your poison, you know, pick your awful adventure kind of thing. So it's like, and this is why it's kind of easy to bring people into the TPP conversation, because you can just walk up to anybody and say, hey, what's your issue? Oh, education? Okay, well, let's talk about that. Oh, the environment? Oh, food? Like, literally every facet of your life is affected by this trade deal. So for me personally, I guess it depends on the day, you know. It depends on whether I'm eating lunch or, you know, taking a walk by forests. Like, the TPP is so overarching and so sweeping that it's just it's hard to pinpoint just one issue that I think is the most atrocious.
The investor state is the one that troubles me the most, because I personally know, like, the country of Peru is all organic, and now with signing with the TPP, Monsanto gets to sue them for billions and billions of dollars, which means they'll capitulate and allow GMOs in, and it'll ruin their food supply, and then the people will start getting cancer at elevated levels. Like, that's the reality.
Yeah,
it really does open the door for just these corporate overlords to go in and remove any kind of economic sovereignty that any local principality or government or city decides that they want to, you know, and many times in a democratic process decide they want to do certain things, I think it's Vermont that decided they wanted to, you know, have GMO labeling. Well, this TPP thing could throw that into jeopardy. You know, it's just the implications here are pretty broad, and it's really hard to say what's going to really happen here. And now we're coming down to the final stretch with the TPP, now that Obama signed it over in New Zealand today. And as I mentioned earlier, under the distraction of the elections and all the stuff that's going on with that, it pretty much flew under the radar. And no one, I probably, if you go up to anyone on the street and ask them, hey, did you know the TPP was signed today? And they're going to be like, first of all, most of them aren't going to know what the TPP is. The second of all, they're going to be like, no, I didn't know it was signed today. This is a big story, and always when these really big things happen. It's under the distraction of something else. And right now, it's the election and other things. And so now we're at the home stretch where the TPP is actually going to become reality very soon, unless it's stopped at the congressional level, which is an uphill battle. So I encourage everyone listening tonight to go over to Flush the TPP. Is it .org or .com?
It's .org. And I mean, it's a great resource, not just because it tells you like the horrific sides of the TPP, but it also gives you several outlets to take action, like the boycott for trade justice. And it gives you, everything from OccuCards to hand out to being able to create a toolkit for creating your own actions. So, and there are a bunch of communities that are rising up and saying that if the TPP is ratified, which Congress has 2 years to do, and a lot of people, a lot of experts are saying that it wouldn't happen in this Congress, because even though there are several people on both sides of the aisle that think it's a good idea, there are Tea Partiers that think that this is a shit deal because it does give it takes power. It basically gives too much power to Obama, so they don't think it's going to be done until Obama's out of office, and then we'll see who takes the helm after that. But either way, flushthettpp.org is a tremendous resource for several ways to get involved with the movement.
Awesome. So everyone needs to go over there because this TPP deal is just—it's a horrible deal. as you mentioned, the Republicans may be against it at this point in time, but as soon as there's a Republican president, it's like, oh, all power to the federal government. We don't care anymore. The fact that there's a Democrat in office, it's like, oh, we need to remove power from the federal
government. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, that never mattered. And Hillary, now she says that she's kind of vaguely against the TPP, but of course, if she were to win, then she'd sign that shit so fast. I mean,
exactly. I mean, we were mentioning earlier in the show the only candidates, at least former candidate Rand Paul and current candidate Bernie Sanders would probably be the only two that would actually oppose this deal. Hillary Clinton and any other Republican that wins will sign this thing into law, basically. And so we got to be wary of it. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of this crazy radiation stuff, but we're running out of time. We've only got about 2 more minutes. We do have a great article over on the anti-media about some of this stuff going on in the Midwest with these radiation dumps. One of them, Claire covered, which is where they dumped some of the radioactive material from after the Manhattan Project, which was, of course, the program that created the nuclear bombs that we dropped on Japan during World War II. And, of course, we can't let any other country have nuclear bombs. Hat tip to Iran over there. But, Eleanor, we got about a minute and a half. Tell our audience a little bit about your projects you have going on and where they can find your work.
Right. So, I did a piece this week on the I call it the irradiated states of America, because it really is a national and international problem because of the uranium deposits. So I did a segment about that this week, and that's up on YouTube.com/OccupyCom, or you can just go to the Facebook Act Out on Occupy. So that's obviously one of the projects I have is the weekly show Act Out, which aired on Occupy.com and Safe Beach TV. Besides that, the band Rooftop Revolutionaries, it's a political hard rock band, again, with the overarching issue of running politics. Spoken word is a part of Act Out every week. It opens with a spoken word piece. I also have a poetry book of these spoken word pieces that will also combine them with art from artists like Anthony Freda, Abby Martin, and a lot of others that I can't think of right now. So that's coming out this year as well. And just continuous like creative activism events and combining art and activism. In a nutshell.
Eleanor, thanks for joining us to my panel tonight. Thank you for, of course, the always awesome commentary. Thank you all for listening into the Anti-Media Radio. We're live 5 days, same place. Same. Yo, here we go through the stereo.